Why did you agree to do this fucking very poorly? Listen.
We could do it on the way home.
I don't think there's going to be video available at that point.
Oh, that's a good point.
Anyway, so you were... What part did we lose? You were telling me... you perfectly diagnosed me as using gadgets to fill a hole, which my wife would love to hear someone say to me. And then you were saying...
Okay, Phil Kopczynski, very hilarious comedian. He used to have a podcast. He had the sense to quit. But
the good sense.
One time, I think this is why he quit. One time he was getting ready to podcast. I don't know where he did it, his garage or something. And his wife said, "Are you going to go play with your microphones again?" Oh. I think that was it. That was the...
Damn.
That's the most brutal takedown of a comedian's podcast I've ever heard.
And there's a lot of comedians' podcasts that have got received brutal takedowns.
But from someone who loves you.
Right. That's pretty rough. I almost nearly made the same mistake that I always do, which is I start the directions that would allow someone to reverse engineer their way to my home.
Yeah.
And as I said, there was a shooting near my house recently, so I'm even more on guard. I've had the good sense to quit many podcast games. I just start.
Yeah, that me too. I keep quitting them and I keep starting them. Whenever I quit, I just miss running my fucking mouth. That's the honest truth of it. Is it's just like, oh, I like to pontificate to no one.
Yeah. It's genuinely like the feeling of, and I don't know if this is how you do it, but having headphones on and hearing your own voice in headphones is like fucking fun. It's fun. I've loved radio since I was like a kid. I don't listen to radio anymore, but I do listen to podcasts. I've loved it. I almost got mugged at that gas station once.
Casey, let's talk about moving. There's been a shooting. You got mugged at that gas station.
I know. God, the problem is that we want to stay in Tacoma proper, and like Tacoma at one point, although I feel like they say this about every like medium-sized city in the fucking country, was at one point like the hottest real estate market.
Yeah, they do say that about everywhere.
Our house has gone down in value like 60 grand in the last couple months.
Oh shit, it's happening.
Yes, well it was up $240,000. So.
Yeah, that's preposterous.
Yeah,
that's I guess that's when you were supposed to sell? Is that how it works?
Yeah, but I mean then, you know, I mean I guess like if you could perfectly, but here's the thing. The reason it's doing that is because interest rates are super high. This is a real estate lesson for the listeners.
Yeah, I need one.
Interest rates are super high. So like the house you could buy that would give you the same mortgage payment is like less of a house than the house that we have, because interest rates, have you ever like fucked around with one of those mortgage calculators?
I have.
And you're like, oh, the difference between what seems like not that big of a difference in interest rates, like 1%. You're like, oh, that's like $400 a month?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
By the way, I would not recommend a fucking around with a mortgage calculator, because I did that. I think I did. I was doing it for refinancing, and I think I stupidly, it was either right. I think I put my phone number in. Oh my God. For 6 months, 15 times a day.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, this is Gary over at blah, 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 blah. You know, just the constant.
God, I know.
Are you still interested? And I'm like, I never contact. You know, it's like I didn't contact a specific company. So it was a nightmare. Well, that's probably an extreme word to use, but it was a real pain in the ass.
No, I think that they've made horror movies about that exact thing.
They won't stop calling!
I fucked up and I was like, well, how much would it cost to get central air in this house? Let's see if we can... Oh, there's like very convenient... You could get a quote very easily. Yeah. Just put in, you know... And then all of a sudden, like, every fucking HVAC company in Tacoma or Pierce County was calling me or emailing me on a daily basis until I'm like, I don't know what I did. I guess I just waited them out long enough. Like, I never answered. Because I don't answer calls from numbers I don't recognize anyway, and I get so many goddamn Like, I literally just got a robocall as we're sitting here.
Yeah, there was a period of time where robocalls had kind of gone away. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in the last few years, they're back. And it's one of those things where you're like, I guess it works, or they wouldn't do it, right? It must work.
I think it's one of those, like, volume things.
Yeah.
It's like that, I think robocallers are like the pickup artists of the sales world. Because it's just like, it's just a numbers game. It's like, we're going to convert on 0.5%, but it costs us almost nothing. And
it's like me emailing comedy clubs.
Yes. Yes.
When if they get back to me, I'm like, oh shit. That's probably what they're like. Like, oh my God, this guy answered. Yeah.
Can I say that it feels amazing to hear you have that experience also? Because I'm just like, when somebody messages and says, hey, you emailed the wrong email, it's like a fucking victory. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I think that's one thing that I don't... Look, I would say where I live here in the Northwest, for the most part, that stuff kind of comes to me. Like, I don't seek it out that often.
Right.
There's some exceptions to that, but as far as, like, my national bookings, it's like, I think that's... I actually wouldn't... When I talk to the young comedians at my lectures... I don't think they understand that it's like, what, you know, whatever, I'm 21 years in, I'm established or whatever, but it's like if to retire from national road work, there's no formal announcement that would have to be made. Right. I would just stop emailing, and that, you know what I mean? That'd be it. No, yeah. People 4 years from now, a club would be like, whatever happened to Gabe Rutledge?
And they might book you.
Yeah, exactly.
And they'd still be like, actually, he's in our rotation. Casey? We don't know that guy, but... yeah, that's funny. The how many emails do you think you send a month?
It's less than it used to be. I'm kind of like... I'm less... I do less cold emailing than I used to. But I send... I mean... I don't know. 10 to 20. Maybe more than that. If you count the ones I'm just responding to, but the ones I'm instigating, it's probably like 20.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's... I had a good conversation with our mutual friend, Rick Taylor, owner of Club Comedy Seattle and comedian. But he's a guy who, like, you know, you're so used to comedians or bookers being like, just treating you like you don't exist.
Yeah.
Because in your mind, in their mind, you essentially don't exist. Until you email them at, like, the exact right moment where they're like, oh, shit, yeah, actually, we do need someone for that, you know, whatever.
Do you mind hosting?
Sure, of course. Yeah, you want to go two levels down and for what you're asking for? But Rick, not only does he email me, but then I showed up at the club, and I was like, I was on this showcase, and I was like, there's other comics that I know work this club there. I have no idea if I'm starting at, like, ground zero, and I'm fine with that. Like, Rick's, I think, like, a good dude, and is very honest, which is not always the case with... And I was, like, closing it out, and he's like, by the way, you don't need to, like, do these tryouts. Like, come work my club. I was like, oh, my God, I want to kiss you. Like, this is fucking... This is such a nice change. It's crazy how, like, little you have to do to be just nicer than every booker in the history of comedy.
We are definitely sort of an adopted, abused animal. Yeah. That's like, we think a pet is a hit. You know what I mean? We're flinchy. Yeah, it is amazing that... that being said, I don't envy that side of the business because it's just relentless pestering by people that aren't as funny as me.
Right, exactly. Well, no, that's the thing. Is like, that's why it's nice to have, like, the actual booker's email and not to be emailing info@comedyclub.com.
Yeah.
Because they're getting 200 emails and you just have to hope that they open your email, which is probably like a 1 in 200 shot, and then that they like your stuff early enough to watch it, care, and fucking choose to email you back. I get that. And, like, I've never booked a comedy club, but I book shows, and it's very annoying.
Oh, to get, yeah.
Like, emails out of nowhere.
Yeah, it's I've booked an occasional one-nighter places, and then people will be like, I hear you have some rooms in the Northwest. No, I don't. What do you, you know?
Right.
But I mean, almost everything I get is a connection. You know, I started working Vegas because that the manager of Brad Garrett's Comedy Club used to manage Zanies and Rosemont.
Oh, okay.
I got to Zanies and Rosemont because I did the Great American Comedy Festival, and I met that booker there, and it's like, so there's, you know, that the manager got me in at a different club in Vegas. It's, you know, it's like everything is almost everything I have is connection based. There's a few exceptions, but even clubs, I think, like I remember I emailed Stir Crazy Comedy Club years ago in Glendale, Arizona. He got back to me immediately with like weeks and the money, which never fucking happens. And then he's like, I used to watch you all the time at this other club.
Like, oh, that's awesome.
You know what I mean? So it's like, even when I don't realize it's a connection, it's, but you're at the point where you're still making those connections, you know, and, yeah. you don't know what they are. Like 5 years ago, you might've done a show with Rick, not knowing he was going to own a comedy club. Today's waitress is tomorrow's booker. And you know what I mean? It's like it's those connections that really,
I mean, that's like literally the case at Tacoma Comedy Club. Is like the manager there now was before I started comedy, she was a waitress there and worked her way through the ranks. And now she's the manager there. And yeah, that's, I mean, I will say I've gotten good advice on this, which is just like, be nice to everyone. Cause you don't know who might own a comedy club one day. And I never like, it's always nice. A guy like Rick, specifically, and Tacoma Comedy Club, I've had this experience also, where it's like, you do so many things where you're like, and not, this is going to sound, I'm not comparing myself to Bill Burr, but I think we've talked about this quote before, where he talks about just killing an obscurity.
Yeah.
And, like, you do a lot of shows where you're like, I did well, and nobody but the booker that booked me today saw that. So, like, for, like, there's certain bookers that I'm like, I know I can just, and this is why you probably aren't cold fucking emailing places, is your time is better spent emailing people you've already worked for than trying to get the same money from a different place and maybe, you know, even potentially fucking up other work because that's a competitor or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's, like, people who I'm like, they saw me do well one time and now they're like, you have carte blanche, come fucking. And then there's people who I'm like, you saw me do well, and you won't respond to my fucking emails. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and that is, especially on a national level, this is some old man talk, but it's, you know, it's harder than ever to move up by being funny. Right. It's still a factor. It's still significant, but sort of that old system that maybe was ending when I started in 2000 at a comedy club. It was like, if they book me in the middle and I like blow the headliner away, maybe they'll bring me back in headline. And it wasn't that easy then, but it was definitely easier then than it is now. I feel like now at a major comedy chain, like if you go to a Helium, have the greatest shows of your life, get a standing ovation every night, they are not going to bring you back to headline. In fact, they probably won't bring you back to middle.
Right.
Because you're a problem. They're like, that Wayans brother you just buried hates you.
Yeah.
You know? Or so it's like that idea of like, obviously at the base of everything we do is I'm going to get funnier and things will happen. And that is still true. That's still true. But that idea of like, there's a lot of comedy advice just like be undeniable. Well, it's kind of true, but I mean, I don't, you know, not to make it all about me, but I've been undeniable for over a decade. Right. And it's like, I've gotten things, I have a busy schedule, but it's a lot easier said than done. It's a lot more, there's a lot more that goes into that. It's just like, man, if you get funny, they'll come to me. And it's like, not really, not really. But it still happens. And I also feel like there's kind of a new breed of club owner that, you know, people who are opening clubs in the last 5 or 10 years, I just think there's a better understanding of sort of, you know, the old model of maybe not understanding social media and marketing and all that.
Gotcha.
But I do feel like there's a new breed of club owner. It might not still might be hard to headline, but they have a better understanding of what your value is. And I would put that Tacoma Comedy Club chain in that too, and Rick, especially in Seattle. It's like, I don't know, they just understand, you know, they don't, if you've been a comedy club owner long enough, like really old school, it was just like you put comedy on a door and there's a liner on the block.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like they didn't understand the, you know, you go into clubs now, they got, like, Rick will give you video, which is, like, such a huge thing now.
Right.
You know, so it's
even just, like, getting, I did a show in Portland at this fucking, I mean, it was Kelly's Olympian. It was completely produced by me. It was just for my sister's wedding, right? And so we actually, like, they give you 100% of the door. It's actually a really good deal.
That's not bad.
And we packed it out, but I didn't make any of the bridal party and all them pay for tickets.
Right.
So it's like completely full, but I sold like 7 tickets and I put like $100 into it. So it's like break even on those at best. I paid all the other comedians on the show and they give you free drink tickets. And now this is just a little thing. I've put, you know, 50 people into this room that weren't going to be there otherwise. They give you free drink tickets, and I go, hey, can I get this free Pilsner? The guy pours it, and then I go to give him the drink ticket, and he goes, doesn't work for this. And I'm like, I look on it, and it says, like, you know, there's, like, these drafts and these whatever. And it's like, a free Pilsner from a keg costs $2, maybe. Not, and that's, by the way, I'm sure they get a better deal on it. If I buy a keg of free Pilsner as one person at retail price, it's less than $2 a beer.
Yeah.
I'm sure they get it for less than that. The Rolling Rock that I had to get instead is probably 75 cents a beer. So the difference between, like, me being annoyed or not annoyed is not worth 75 cents to this place. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I feel like that goes back to what we were talking about how, you know, you go into a club, they have like a nice green room. Oh, here's a case of water or beer or candy, or like, here's your waitress.
Right.
Things like that, where it's like, that shit goes so far because we get treated like absolute shit so much of the time. Even at a, especially at a non-comedy club, where it's like, it'll be packed on a Thursday. You know, not because it's me, but just because the comedy show does well.
But it's you and the other comedians that they book are good enough
that
people keep coming back, right?
It's, you know, what? There's 100 people in some fucking sports bar on a Thursday night, and the, you know, the staff's yelling drink orders to each other. They're not, you know, they're like, you only get Rolling Rock, and you're like, what did you guys used to have on Thursday?
Right.
What?
Well, that's even, like, the gig we were talking about that I guess I won't name because I want to do it again. But, you know, the one we were talking about right before we got in that we drove to most recently?
Oh, yeah.
So that one, I go up to the lady, and I'm like, hey, can I get a pitcher of water? And she goes, can't give you a pitcher right now. Sorry, too busy. And I'm like,
because of me.
You're busy because we're here.
Yeah.
And we will be worse if you don't give me a fucking pitcher of water so I'm not, you know, fucking parched when I go on stage. Like, and I'm not asking for a fucking bottle of whiskey and you to come make cocktails.
Right.
Put a fucking pitcher under a faucet. I don't need your stupid fucking, you know what I mean?
And that, like, was like a Tuesday or a Wednesday.
Yeah, something
and
like that.
It was totally packed out.
Completely sold out.
Yeah. And there's just like, I don't have time for your shit. Like, yes, because of the comedy show. I'm a little parched before I do my jokes. Do you mind?
Before I go talk for probably longer than the booker wanted me to talk for, if you remember. I burned the light and then I kept burning the light. I've done that a couple times in the last year. And it's like, because I just have this joke. The problem is I've positioned my merch pitch in a horrible spot in my act. And so I go with merch on stage and I'm like, well, I gotta sell this merch. So I'm sorry, I'm gonna burn the light, which is bad. I'm not good. I'm a bad person, but I kept referencing it. I got off stage and he goes, it was fine. Could you have stopped saying it though? And I was like, yeah, good, good. That's good feedback, is to not keep acknowledging it over and over again.
The crowd's like, I don't know how much time he's supposed to get.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I do that too, because I go, yeah, when I do the merch pitch, I'm like, in my head, I'm like, ah, shit, I gotta fast forward, whatever, I'm gonna, there's actually, you know, a little inside, when you headline, you can go over a little bit, even sure. At a club, you can go over a little bit, but it's, I've had so many ideas for closers over the years, but it's like a 4 or 5 minute bit, and I'm like, I can't, because there's no fucking way I'm gonna have that 4 or 5 minutes left. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, this would be the best closer. It builds so... And it's like, really, you pitch your merch and you need something you can do in 2 minutes, you know?
So do you feel... I'm actually curious about this because you... So have you always done it that way where you, or have you, like, fucked around with... Because I have, like, right now, my two things that I would close on if given the opportunity to headline are both, like, one's, like, a 8-minute story and one's a 9-minute story.
Well, at a one-nighter, yeah. Do your 8-minute story, but at a club where it's like a little more on the clock, you know.
Gotcha. Because I think, I mean, you could do it theoretically at like 30 minutes, but at a club maybe there's like the check drop or whatever at that spot.
Yeah, it just,
Can I say something about the check drop?
Fucking hate it.
Well, because I always have heard headliners talk about it, and I like understood the concept, and I think the first times I headlined at clubs, it was like I wasn't doing so well that it became so obvious.
Yeah.
And then the last time I was headlining at a Spokane Comedy Club, I was like, oh, I fucking suck. What happened?
Yep.
And then I'm like, oh, that's this. I'm literally on stage having the realization that, like, it's crazy because I always thought it was like at the end of your set as a headliner. It's like 20 minutes
in. Yeah. Yeah, it depends. But it, yeah, it's very, I mean, it's the brakes, man. You just, it's like, you're just cruising along and then it's like, no one's paying attention.
Yeah.
I'll comment on it if it's bad enough.
Mm-hmm.
But you do have to remember that, like, they don't think you're not doing well because they're doing math. They're figuring out their, but yeah, it's, I just can't believe that still has to happen because a lot of clubs don't do that anymore.
Yeah,
I would say that about the new wave of comedy clubs too. A lot of them don't do it. They figure out a way to, like, I don't know what. If you pay, you get this token, and you get to leave the room with the token. And you know, there's just different. I mean, when I work Canada, they're like check drop. Never what? What's that?
Well, the shows in Canada, if I remember, don't they have intermissions too? Sometimes.
No, I think UK does, but not the ones I've done in Canada.
I haven't done a show in Canada. I did the old Laugh Lines with Steve Gillespie. And then it immediately sold to, well, immediately, years later, it sold to House of Comedy, and I'm just not, I gotta get in one of these, another, if I could get in, like, one more chains rotation, boy, could I get MVP status in Alaska. That's my whole goal for this year, is just to get MVP status in Alaska. I'm, like, literally planning a vacation with my wife just to be like, well, I'll get MVP status off this, so that'll be good, or it'll at least contribute.
I think I'm going to get it. I don't have it yet, but I think I'm going to get it.
Yeah, it seems great. And all the, like, getting upgraded stuff. That's the other thing. There's two things that caused me to care about it. And one of them is when I had all the problems traveling around New Year's.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I got upgraded to first class one time for free. And it's never happened to me before in my life. And I was like, all right, I got to be loyal to somebody because I want this. I want to experience this every fucking time.
I'm new to Alaska this year. I switched over, got the credit card.
Did they, like, allow you to roll over your status? Or did you try to do that?
I don't think so. I don't know what that means.
Gotcha. I think some of them, like, if you go to Delta and you're like, hey, I'm Alaska, 75,000 miles, they'll go, oh, well, we can put you at that status until next year. Like, presuming if you're telling the truth or if you did it the last year. We want you to do it here, so we'll give you we'll treat you like a human being.
It's, this is going to be a weird comparison, but, like, I was, I was thinking about airlines. I just did 2 weeks of shows in the Middle East, comedy shows for our troops. Am I a hero? Yes, I am. Am I more of a hero than the soldiers? Yes, I am.
Do you remember when you did the joke? I was in the Middle East performing for the troops, not our troops.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
you
yeah.
were at that show in Snohomish. Because I've seen you do that joke
yeah.
100 times.
Yeah.
And it's like a 100% success rate joke. And that one time, it just completely
You think a check drop brings the show to a halt. I just... dead silence, and in the back of the room, I saw an American flag cry.
You know what show I never got to do with you that I did want to do was the one that you did outside, because I thought I might have had COVID.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the show where, like, the back was the Lauren Culp.
Oh, yeah. That club was straight up illegally doing comedy shows during COVID.
Yes.
And they got caught because I had another one booked and they're like, we got shut down by fucking Jay Inslee.
We broke the exact rules that he set out and made very clear. No, but I mean, I was going to go do the show. I think we all reached a point. Well, not all of us, but many of us reached a point where it's like, it's no longer my moral imperative to keep people alive.
Yeah, I think that's changed. I'll get back to my point eventually. But I think that's changed because I was just, when I, well, 2 weeks in the Middle East, all these, like, 12 and a half hour flights and airports, and I had no COVID. I get home, and my wife had COVID.
Oh, shit. Did she already have one?
6 months ago.
Damn.
This every 6 months shit is rough. Especially if it fucks you up enough that it takes a while to get over it.
So, did it fuck her up the first time or this
not
time?
The first time, but I can already tell she's like, fatigue's gonna be an issue because it's been like 10 days, I think. But this is the funny thing. So she didn't know she had COVID the night I got home. I mean, you know, it's no one's business, but like, we had sex when I got home.
Dirty dog.
I mean, I'm married. God's fine with it, Casey. He enjoys it.
Not the God you just left in the Middle East,
no,
okay?
He does not enjoy much. That God is no fun. So it was kind of like, I didn't get it.
Right.
And I was joking with my wife, you know, I've been gone for 2 weeks. I've been staying in air-conditioned tents and bunk beds, not a love it alone time. I'm like, I think... the CDC says 15 minutes of exposure, and I'm like, I mean, what were we going to do it, three times? Like, also, I just got off a plane. I was like, oh, we're not kissing. I love you too much to bring my dehydrated mouth to your... I think that saved me. I think our married / prostitute sex prevented me from getting COVID. It's weird. No one in my family got it. To my knowledge, only Aluno had sex with her. That was a weird transition. But still, no one in my family got it. That was kind of weird. But
I remember when, at the beginning, Robert Kelly, his wife, got it, and he never got it. And I was like, that is the most jealous I am of the idea of a premise. Of like, my wife has the most contagious disease, and she's so unwilling to touch me. That I didn't even catch it.
Yeah.
And then that my wife got it and I never got it. I was like, oh no. Oh no, it's not as fun as I thought.
And the smile drained from my face. Yeah. This is what I was gonna say, why I was thinking about airlines when I was on these military bases, because most of them are shit. They're like really rough accommodations. Some of them are like even like you can't flush toilet paper. You have to wipe your ass, throw the toilet paper in a garbage can next to the toilet. It's
damn.
It's rough. But they all had their version of luxury, meaning like we would drive past a tent that had like a little porch in the front of it, and they're like, that's the colonel's tent. And I was like, this is like airlines, because it's still horrible, but they're like, you get a free water right when you're walking. Or, like, there's an extra 2 inches of leg room. It's like all that shit
That's really funny.
It's so important. Or even my pre-check, I walk past 50 people with my pre-check, and I'm like, look at these fucking peasant animals.
It's funny, too, because that water is, like, the mini-size water also. Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh, you get 4 drinks of water for free. For only $450 extra dollars.
Yeah, what a deal!
Yeah.
You're still in the same fucking germ tube bouncing through the sky, but you're, like, better than them, though, right? That's all I needed. That's all I needed.
I need something to distinguish me from these pieces of shit back here. That's very funny. Yeah, I've done the, like, not quite first class, like, comfort or whatever a couple times. And I had so I'm pretty... We've never taken our daughter on a plane, but I will say every child behavior in public that's, like, negative child behavior, I'm so much more empathetic to people. Do a nice little accident on camera. That'd be good. That'd be good.
Yeah, we can carpool.
We're carpooling.
We're good citizens. The kids screaming on planes and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, we're like, you know, kids. We were at a hotel the other day, and my daughter just, like, sat on the ground and started screaming. And you're like,
she's the right age. How old is she?
3.
They're uncontrollable.
Right.
What are you going to do, hit them?
Right. And it's like, so now I'm, like, very much, but I'm sitting in this seat, and I don't even need the kid to stop. I paid extra for this seat. This lady is in a row behind me. And I paid extra because I'm trying to get some sleep on the way home because I'm fucking taking a red eye because I travel like a 21-year-old who has unlimited energy. And this lady's like, hey, my husband's actually going to be sitting next to you in the center seat. It's the same comfort class back here. Would you mind switching me seats? You'll have the window still. It's like basically the same. I was like, yeah, no problem. So I switch. And then a kid's just kicking the back of my seat the whole fucking time. Like, not, if he was just like rhythmically, you know, kicking it softly, no big deal. But it's like every 15 minutes I get a full foot in my back, and then it's kicking constantly. I'm trying to sleep and it's not working, and I keep doing the, like, look over my shoulder at the kid. All I need is the mom to go, you know, Jimmy, stop it.
Yeah,
that's all I want. I just want to know that she's putting in effort. I understand it's not a fucking 100% success rate proposition to tell
you want an attempt. I totally I get that. I just, when I flew back from Jordan, the country, I don't know where else it would be. Michael Jordan's house. Jordan to Chicago, 12 and a half hours. And that flight was a Jordanian daycare. It was fucking chaos. And again, this kid's just screaming and crying, and I didn't hear the parents say one thing. And like, you want it. That's what give it an attempt. Hey.
Yeah.
Calm down a little. I just flew to Chicago again.
Jordan's there.
He's there. I flew to Chicago yesterday, flew back today. I don't know where I am. But there was a guy who had, I'm assuming, sleep apnea so bad on the plane that I couldn't sleep.
Oh, wow.
He was not even on my, sitting next to me. He was at one row in front of me, and it was like thunderously, like, just like, it was like the whole plane's like looking at this guy. Like, kind of wishing death on him.
Yeah.
You know?
And he might die right there.
It seemed like he was about to die.
Jeez.
Not a big dude either. Just like a pretty skinny dude, but like, man.
Well, you've heard me snore. And I will say, I believe that since you and I shared a passionate night of love making in a hotel
room, I don't recall sleeping that much.
I was snoring still, though, weirdly.
That's my pleasure noise.
You're one of the rare comedians who's had the joy of listening to me snore. And I don't know how bad it is. My wife has recorded me before.
Oh, shit.
And it's like, and actually, you know, Jess Everett, God, I was going to bring up Jess Everett and talk some shit about him because he annoyed me. And I also feel like there's a pipeline of like, when someone opens for me, it's like a pipeline to eventually open for you. He's never opened for you though, right?
No.
Never let him. he'll record you snoring.
He recorded you snoring?
Well, so Alex Kaufman, who we're doing a show with today, I got booked to headline Spokane Comedy Club. And I was like, hey, how about this person? They were like, first I go, can I book a feature? And they were like, no. I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then like 15 days before, they're like, hey, did you ever book a feature? And I'm like, well, no, you said no. And I was like, can this person do it? I was actually golfing with Jess. And they, you know, they said yes. And they go, yes, but he has to either figure out a place to stay or stay with you. So I was like, okay, well, can you just make it like a two queen hotel? Which is, I feel like they gotta change the language from when two dudes sleep in the hotel to call it a two queen room. Feels like that's...
Hey, can a couple of kings get a couple queens tonight? You know what I mean?
But so I was like, can you make it a two queen room? And then we got our pal, Alex Kaufman, to host. So we had like a full-on, like domestic terrorist sleeper cell going on. Like, we had the blackout curtains, and it's just like three dudes sleeping in a very small space. And Alex snores also, by the way. Which he does, he doesn't look like, he looks like he would snore, but he would do the like whistling, like thing.
Yeah.
When it was coming out, like it's like a cartoon character of one of the seven dwarves snoring. Anyway, I'm very self-conscious about snoring on an airplane. And however, do you have noise-canceling headphones?
I'm going to get some. Last flight, I'm like, that's it. I gotta get the... I mean, I'm sure I've snored. I'd snore sometimes. I'm sure I have snored on a plane. It's so loud that for the most part, I don't think...
For someone to be that obnoxious over the engine noise is pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty... And also, man, he was out. We hit like some pretty rough turbulence going down. And he's like... People are like, oh! And he's like...
I will say that's me. I have... The last like 10 flights I've taken, I brag about it on the podcast. I sleep through the takeoff.
That's the dream. I have done it. That's time travel. That's the beauty when that happens.
I actually have woken up a couple times during the takeoff, and it's actually, you wake up and it's like vibrating and you're actually reclined like to a comfortable position, and I'm like, oh, this is great. And just fall back asleep immediately. It's funny how, like, I don't know, I guess, I don't know how long I've been, like, I have such little anxiety about flying now. I used to be very anxious about flying, and I don't know what switch flipped, but now I'm like, I guess I just don't care anymore.
I talk to people who don't like flying, and some of them fly all the time, and that makes no sense to me. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, we start bouncing around up there, I'll get nervous, but...
I'll stay asleep.
If it's not, like, the more you fly, like, I just did all these flights to Saudi Arabia and all this stuff. I came home. I was home for 3 or 4 days. I flew to Chicago. That turbulence we hit, I don't think my heart rate increased because I was just like, yeah, we're on a plane, you know. There's that old, there's that great Ron White bit from the Blue Collar Comedy Tour, the first one, so, you know, he wrote it.
Where, the White Kings of Comedy.
Yeah, exactly. And he's talking about being on a small plane and everyone's freaking out, and he's like, if we crash, I hope we hit something hard because I don't want to limp away from this thing. Such a great fucking line. That's how you feel when you're like super tired on a plane, where you're just like, you know what, let's take it down.
Yeah. It's funny because I used to be like, I guess this is true of going on stage too, but when you're when you first start, you're like, you'd be at an open mic and you're like, oh, I'm like five spots away. At least I have 25 minutes until I have to go do this thing that I've committed to. And then eventually you're like, get this piece of shit off stage. I should be up there. I don't want to fucking wait for this guy to do 10 minutes. Let me go. And I feel that way about when I used to fly. It'd be like, the flight got delayed. I'm like, oh, thank God, 25 more minutes before I die. I get an extra 25 minutes of life. And now, if the flight gets delayed, I'm always so fucking tired, or anticipating being tired, that I'm like, let me get on. Listen, delay it. Just let me fucking sit on it and fall asleep. Like, don't. Man, I flew to Indianapolis, and we got on the plane. And one of the passengers noticed, like, a minuscule imperfection in a window. And the way that you have to fix this imperfect, it was like the exterior vent that allowed water to escape.
Okay.
The window was like not working, was like clogged. Zero impact on flight, but the person freaked out enough that we deplaned the entire fucking plane, because the way you have to do it is to remove the window.
All right.
And fucking, that, you know, that's like an hours long process, whatever. And then we sat in the, they sent us to one gate to find a new plane, but they have to, of course, get all the crew and everyone off and then back onto this new plane and then bring us onto it. Well, then the gate changes. And so I'm like, I was sitting in my seat. I was ready to fall asleep. And I had had my flight get canceled, the one to Appleton, Wisconsin. And so I like stayed awake because I felt, you know, you feel something's afoot every now and then on a plane where you're like, ah, these, you know, there's a lot more serious looks. Why is the captain walking through the fucking,
yeah,
plane or whatever, you know? And I was right to be worried. But yeah, that was like, you know, I should have been asleep. And now it's hours and hours of extra time because some fucking asshole is scared of flying, is basically the deal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have been.
You fucking cause, you're constantly causing planes to have to deplane.
No, in fact, one time I got, they delayed the whole flight because they couldn't put a seat up. It was stayed in the recline position.
Oh my God.
I know. Hours. And so, actually, a couple months ago, I got on a plane, realized my seat was broken, and did not say shit. I just, like, I would pull it up when they walked past. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm not playing this game.
I had a woman, I was in a dead sleep.
A fucking woman? Is that how you talk about them, Casey?
Every one of them. I can't stand them. So I'm sitting in my fucking row. I'm asleep, dead sleep, comfortable, sleeping great. And the flight attendant taps me on the chest to wake me up because apparently I'm so goddamn fat that when I'm sitting in an unreclined seat, it looks reclined. She goes, sir, you have to bring your seat up. I'm like, what? And she's like pissed because now I'm answering shitty. And she's like, you have to unrecline your seat. I'm like, I didn't recline my seat. She's like, sir, I can see your seat's reclined. And I tilt forward and it doesn't move. And like I'm pushing the button. She's like, oh, I'm very sorry.
There is a weird, you know, every single industry is like kind of in chaos right now. Mm-hmm. Teachers.
Yeah.
Your wife knows education's in fucking shambles right now. Healthcare, airlines, like everything is just fucking chaos. Labor shortages, people quitting. So there's this weird thing where like it started when the customers post-COVID were like insane animals. But I feel like now the people who work places are insane animals because they're just like, one, they know they're not going to get fired.
Right.
And as a response to how shitty people were to them, they're like preemptively, like there was a flight, this was not Alaska. I think it was United because I was flying back. I didn't pay for it. And a guy hit, we were on the ground, a guy hit the call button and it jammed. So it just went like, dong, 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 dong. It was so hilarious. And I don't even know why he hit the button, but the sky waitress next to me, she screamed at him, sir, no, no, that is not okay. What do you need? If it's not a medical emergency, she is screaming at him. And he's like, it got stuck. I think he was trying to hit the light, maybe even. It was like
he didn't even need her.
No.
How long did it go for?
I mean, 20 bongs. Bong, 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 bong.
I've never measured it in bongs before.
Yeah, 20 bongs. But
that's the name of this podcast. Yeah. 20 bongs, and it's going to be the least satisfying 20 bongs.
That everyone around is like kind of wide-eyed, like, what the fuck is with this lady just screaming? But no one says anything, because, like, yeah, you know.
Well, because they might fucking carry you off the airplane.
Yeah, we're in terror of these people. They might drag us off.
They fucking zip tie you and drag you down the aisle. Yeah, like, that is scary, yeah.
But yeah, but there was like no sense of like customer service. There was no sense of like, you would think, I mean, I feel like 2019, the tone would have been like, Sir, we've already landed. Do you need something? Or please don't hit the button. But it was like screaming at this guy. And I'm like, all right, we're off the rails, is it?
I also like that job. Because you think about, like, you did a 12-hour flight, right? And it's hard to do a 12-hour flight. But you do the 12-hour flight sitting and fucking watching your iPad or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they have, for a longer flight like that, they have bigger crews and allow them to take extended breaks, I'm sure.
I think so.
I think they have sleeping quarters in there.
Yeah. By the way, this was not the international flight. This was just Chicago to Seattle. But
yeah, you think about, like, just how, like, Sky Waitress is, like, an intentionally funny thing that people say that's derogatory.
Well, they're primarily here for our safety.
Yeah. Yes, they are all lifesavers. Most of them are... They're like firefighters in the sky. But
they're the air's first responders.
Yeah.
And also they're there to wake you up 45 minutes before you land to pitch you a fucking credit card.
Yes.
Assholes.
By the way, I've never had flown Southwest, and then I guess maybe I had, but I just wasn't like aware or had headphones on when the thing that they do at the beginning of the flight where it's like some white lady comes out and raps the safety rules or something like that. I had to stop being a customer. I was like ready to switch because it's so affordable.
That's the only, because I like Southwest. They're actually nice and their customer service is good. But I switched because they have way less one-way flights than most airlines. And that rap, it's not always a rap, but there's like a comedy. I've had Southwest, they'll sing a song as we're landing. They'll tell jokes as we're landing. But again, the funny announcements, like,
in the unlikely event of a water landing, I know I wouldn't have shown up to work today.
I'm just like, oh my God, I hope there is a water landing.
Yeah.
And then, you know what it's like. As a comedian, I think that's part of the problem is, like, when you're professionally funny, you're like, you see people laughing, and you're like, I hate you worse than them.
Yeah, I'm going to get off this plane.
If no one laughed, they would never do this.
Yeah, there's, you know what, you're right. I'm sure people actually like it. There's probably people who, there's probably fucking dog shit people in this world who that's the reason they like Southwest. That's the thing that makes them feel comfort, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're probably right about that. But a lot of it is like, I feel like any seasoned traveler doesn't like it. But the person who has a suitcase they dragged on because it doesn't have wheels, yeah. They're like, this is hilarious. She should be on Saturday Night Live, honestly.
They have a fucking 6-foot-long duffel bag they're trying to shove into the seat in front of them going, no, this is good. This is good.
Yeah.
Who needs in-flight entertainment?
A hefty bag with duct tape wrapped around it. Like, this is hilarious. This is great.
The other thing too about flying that you kind of I don't specifically have like a thing with like Muslims per se when you see Muslims.
Jesus Christ.
I know, we're going
holy there. Shit.
But I do think you start to like when you're in the airport. You know who worries me everywhere is just young people. Because young people are fucking stupid. You know what I mean? And so when you see, like, a young person acting... When you see an old, like, an 80-year-old guy acting weird, Muslim or not. But when you see, like, an 80-year-old dude acting weird, you're like, this guy's harmless.
Yeah, that's true. I think young and drunk is always when I feel like...
Oh, yeah.
They're, like, glassy-eyed because they've been, you know, at the airport bar or whatever. And that's always like, oh, man, this might pop off. You know, I mean, you just get that feeling of, like, I've seen people fight over the...
Oh, shit, do I want to be over there? I think I do.
Are we lost?
No, we're not lost. I think this is going to stop being a carpooling for a second, so...
Yeah, I've seen a couple things on planes where I thought it was going to come to blows. Like, some guy put a seat all the way back, and the other guy got pissed off, which is like, you can't, really. You're allowed right. to put the seat all the way back.
Right.
You know, but...
Yeah, no, sorry, my wife is texting me with about, she's, like, trying to have a conversation with me while I'm fucking in traffic on 405. These women, I tell you, that fucking lady, or what did I say earlier?
These fucking women.
These fucking women. I didn't say these fucking women.
No, you said fucking women.
I had
women.
A fucking woman.
I had a fucking woman. You know what they're doing.
You know how they are. I did say I was going to stop for a Red Bull, and then I've just driven, like, a, you know, truly exuding bravery without a Red Bull. But I do think I'm going to probably stop and get a Red Bull and either change the battery in this camera in case it's... Because I don't know if you noticed by my execution of recording this podcast, I don't have a lot of experience with this device.
Yeah.
But also, I didn't mean to bring it to like a complete halt, but also I'll tell you my real opinion on Muslims. No. It's funny. I actually, like, I had an experience in... Oh, this is funny. You're going to be at the Comedy Cellar soon. I had an experience while I was standing outside in line to go see a show at the Comedy Cellar now, like, 7 years ago, and there was a black dude, like, asking for money pretty aggressively.
Yeah.
And I was like, I mean, being in New York, and especially all the, like, stuff you hear about New York, it was a little bit scary anyway, like, just being in New York. I actually don't think New York's very scary. But you, like, new place, not comfortable with it, and you feel intimidated, and it's got a reputation, et cetera, et cetera. But what I realized is this guy's coming up, and I'm like, am I intimidated by this guy because he's black? And I was like, no, it's because he's poor. Like,
no, it's a class issue.
Yeah, no, I am classist, not racist.
Yeah.
Because I was in, like, a kind of idealistic, I really don't know the difference between those two phrases, to be honest with you, but, where I was like, everybody's good, there's no bad in this world, you know, like,
yeah,
this person was disadvantaged.
Well, okay.
And now I'm like, this guy's disadvantaged, but also, I don't want him to fucking stab me.
That's, yeah, it's, prisons are filled with people who didn't come from a great place, but they still did bad things, but they're still right. In prison. You know what I mean? It's
you ever heard that Patrice joke that's like, I'll see a white lady walking down the street. See, I wonder if 3+, I wonder, they're not going to think we're 3+, kid.
No, unless they weigh us.
We had the car seat in the back.
What was the Patrice joke?
Oh, the Patrice joke is like, I saw this white lady walking down the street, and there was like 4 black dudes. This person's gonna try to cut me off. Oh, they're gonna be nice. There were like 4 black dudes on the same side of the street, and she walked. I hope this isn't an exit that I'm taking right now. Well, I guess if it is, this is where we're getting Red Bull. She stayed on the same line. And I'm like, to not be racist. And I'm like, bitch, be racist and be alive. Like, what are you doing? Don't cross the street, bitch. And I'm like, by the way, that guy uses bitch in a way that's way less. It feels harsh coming out of my mouth every time I say it, but.
This is like that episode of The Office where Michael does Chris Rock bits.
Oh my god, it's so funny. I've had coworkers that, like, they describe, they're like, The Office wouldn't hold up today, and then they describe that exact thing, and I'm like, oh, that's like the funniest. Like, that's also, that's written by Larry Wilmore. That episode.
I think that would hold up, actually.
Oh, I laugh every time. I think people would laugh. I think it's just like, it's like a fun thing to say. That wouldn't hold up these days or whatever.
I used to watch a lot of Oprah in the late 90s, early 2000s. But one thing...
Is that where you got your hair care regimen?
You know what? My weight yo-yoed with her.
Oh, okay.
I was on Nutrisystem. She was on Nutrisystem. But one of the things... I don't remember. I don't know. I wish in life you got to pick what you remembered. But you don't. But I've always remembered this. It was a guest. And the guest said, human beings are the only animal that feels guilty for our instincts.
Mm.
Meaning, whatever, you're walking up to an ATM at night, you see someone you think is sketchy, and you're like, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't go to the ATM, but you're also like, hey, they, come on, everyone's, like, your dog doesn't do that.
Right.
A cat, no animal, a fucking bird doesn't go like, that's probably a good cat. You know, not that we're all, not, we're on different parts of the food chain, I don't mean that part.
That cat came from a rough family.
But yeah, that idea of just like, just like the Patrice joke, like just because these four thugs are approaching me and I'm, you know, I'll be a good white lady and, you know, it's that idea. But that did stick with me. It is, and I've thought that many times in my life, especially because you get feelings that usually aren't wrong.
Right.
Just like you get vibes like, this person's a little unstable and you don't need to talk yourself out of that.
Yeah.
You know, I have people who message me that I think are unstable, and I try to stay on their good side.
Well, I guess this explains why I haven't gotten a response for a while. But
some people I just keep doing their podcast in hopes that they'll take me off
the name.
Take me off the kill list.
I was at a. I remember this. So I went to a comedy show at Tacoma Comedy Club one time, and they used to have this thing called like the super team, and it was like kind of a thing that people already do at comedy clubs a lot, where it's like they kind of volunteer. It's like an internship, basically. You're gonna go do a bunch of shit to make the club like you, then, you know, when the time comes and there's an opportunity to do a guest spot or like in a, like a, you know, I've had a couple full weekends come around where it's like, this person didn't bring a feature, we thought they were bringing a feature, can you come? And I'm like, great, that's like, I just, you know, made an extra $1,000 or something this weekend that I wasn't expecting and got to do four sets. And part of that is because I live close and I've done so many free things for that comedy right. club. And anyway, I'm there and there's two volunteers for this super team, comedy super team. One guy that I know, who I'm friends with, and I'm talking to him, and the other guy, he's like, this guy's kind of strange. And I was like, oh, really? Why? And the guy walks up and he throws two cell phones on the table and he goes, I got two cell phones and a lot of money. And I'm like, this is weird. So then just file that away, right? Just go like, this guy got, you know, if I'm going to remember anything about this guy, this is the thing to remember. And then a couple of years later, that guy, and he was talking about like selling drugs and fucking having guns and stuff. Couple years later, that guy beat up a comedian on stage and then threatened to shoot him.
Yeah.
I was like, this is why you file that away. Because, yeah, like, you could say, like, a true comedian should be willing to roast anybody. But I could tell you, I was never going to get in a roast with that guy because I thought he might beat me up and shoot me. And as it turns out, I wasn't that far off.
Yeah, I just, you know, that's... Sometimes your first instinct on someone is not, it turns out to not be correct, of course. Mm-hmm. But as I've gotten older and I look back at a lot of my gut reactions I've had to people, I mean, pretty good success rate.
Yeah.
You know, where you're like, something about that guy I don't like. And even when other people are like, what do you mean?
And I know.
Then, you know, 2 years later, it's like.
I sometimes feel like people aren't even like paying attention to what.
Yeah.
Like what's good. Because, yeah, there's people who I'm like. Oh, no, that person isn't good. Like, that's not a good person. And they're like, no, he's great. He's like, you know, I'd trust him with my life. And you're like, well, you are fucking stupid.
Well, some of it, especially as a younger man, it would be, I wouldn't like a guy. My female friends would like the guy. And I was like, it's kind of that, I'd be like, but I am a guy. And right. that's why I know what a sleazeball this guy is. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can... Yeah. Like, they're just, like, sort of assuming the best of someone.
Right.
You know, and
well, they also have in the back of their mind, whether you think they do or not, they think, well, maybe Gabe wants to fuck me, and that's why he's saying this guy sucks.
Yeah.
I had this was part of I was the officiant at my sister's wedding.
That is why I was saying it, by the way.
Well, in this story, that's not why I was saying it, because it's about my sister. my sister and I used to have this argument, and it was like right after my wife and I started dating, where we would have it. But she, wait, didn't this say?
In a quarter mile, yeah, take the I-5 south exit towards Seattle.
Shut up, Google. Shut up. It's not like explicitly true, but I would say like basically I don't think that a single man and a single woman can be friends without one of them developing feelings.
Oh my God, Casey.
Northwest.
I know.
I don't know what you think I'm going to say yes, but I so agree with you. That's exactly the shit I'm talking about, right. Kind of. Like, it's one thing to have female friends in a group setting, but just like the two of us go hang out? No.
Right. And so I would say like, I said this to her. Because she would say, she's like, almost all of my friends are dudes. And I'm like, all those dudes want to fuck you.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, they think of me as like another yep. dude. And I'm like, none of them think that.
Nope.
And she married one of those dudes. Like, like, that's the, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
So at one time, she's like, he thinks of me like a sister. And then yeah. she ends up, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I was like, I said this in the ceremony, like, I let one slip through the cracks. Like, I fucked up.
That's great. No, that is absolutely true. They're dude, don't get me wrong, it's not like it's all predator shit. It's less predatory than that. It's not, but it's also like there's so many dudes playing the long game.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many dudes that are just like, yeah, I'm not putting my life on hold just for this person, but that even if I don't know that's the reason, that is why I'm maintaining this relationship.
Yeah, well, it's even like, I mean, by the way, we've had a real fucking a real renaissance in our relationship, as she has realized exactly how correct I was. Like,
yeah.
Because, and even people will say stuff like, he knows I'm married. And it's like, yeah, he knows. But that is not stopping him from doing anything. Like, that, you know, like,
yeah.
And again, it's like, it takes a fucking perv to know a perv, maybe a little bit. You know, we all have instincts of that type that we're not thrilled with. And yeah. It's like, the reason. This is why, like, you know, like, for example, like, if you're a married guy going on the road, it's not like women are fucking trying to fuck me in every town, but there's a thing where it's like, I say this a lot, which is, if my wife walked in, this is how I try to behave on the road. If my wife walked in right now, would she be proud of the way I was behaving? No, I might be drunk and obnoxious. But, like, is she, like,
right.
this... Like, if she sees me talking to a woman, she hears the content of that conversation. Is she, yeah. like, this is, like, a little flirty.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, like, that's gotta... That conversation's gotta end.
Yes. That's actually a very, that's a very good way to keep yourself in check.
Right.
You know, I had someone...
Get it, Gabe. Everyone wants to fuck you. You don't have to brag about it on this podcast, too. Jesus.
No, that's my other podcast called Woman I Fucked. Same guest every week.
Oh, the Rutledges. I remember that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Rutledge
yeah,
Radio.
Yeah, that was good. This was years ago, but this guy started, like, I don't think he wanted to fuck my wife. But he was, like, messaging her, like, very personal things. Like, I'm having trouble in my relationship. This is happening. I wish blah, blah, blah. And I was, like, she was a little taken aback about how mad I was at this dude.
Mm.
And I'm, like, I'm not saying this is, like, leading to, like, him trying to have sex with you. I am saying this is not appropriate behavior. I mean, coworkers kind of... Maybe I'm not suggesting opposite gender should not speak. I am not saying that.
Right.
But it's like to that level of like I'm struggling in my relationship and I'm reaching out to you for support, and I go, no, that's not a thing you do. That's not what you do to a married woman.
Right. I've worked with people who make like insinuations of like if we, you know, like. Like, shit that it's like, it doesn't even seem like it's that crazy, but they'll be like, God damn, look at your ass, or something like that. And I'm like, everybody I've said that to, I fucking mean it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not like joking or being fucking folksy or yeah. polite. Like, if I say you have a great ass, it probably means that I want to have sex with you and you are my wife. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not a, there's not a gray. I don't think there's actually as gray of an area as people think.
Yeah, and that was kind of my again. There's no sexual tone to their messages, but it was just like that thing of like, oh, he's confiding in you.
Yeah,
and you don't know him that well. This is weird.
I'm gonna make an insane. This battery's about to die, and I'm why? Okay. Oh Jesus, that is very long. Okay,
that was me.
Oh, okay. I was like, gee. Sorry, we were talking about our spouses and their naivete around these dudes talking to them. I have a story, but I don't want to interrupt your story any more than I already probably did.
No, there's no big thing, you know, but the main thing is, like, my wife was a little surprised at my reaction of just, like, because she was more like, well, you don't think I'm going to do anything. And I'm like, no, I'm not even saying he's going to do anything. I just mean, like, this is weird. This is weird. And I've done that the opposite way, where women say things to me and I go, no, they're just being nice. And my wife is like, come on.
Right.
Because I don't have the self-esteem or whatever to, like, you know, I think every guy looks back at when they were young and they're like, oh, she was trying to fuck me.
Right.
I didn't even, oh, shit, you know.
Yeah. I think that's true. And I think the other thing is, for me, is, like, it's not even so much, because in that circumstance, I think what you're saying is, I know that I'm not trying to fuck this woman, and I don't think she's trying to fuck me. And to me, the thing is, it's not really even about whether or not you or the other person is trying to fuck you. It's putting your spouse through the torment of worrying about it. And that's why I try to, like, be... I call it a... It's a... I got the line from Jim Harbaugh, of all people, the infallible pro-life dickhead Jim Harbaugh. But he talked about how his team has to be above reproach. And I say, like, the way that I act has to be above reproach. Like, I can't... It should stand up to any... Like, I mean, again, I think that the standard of just, like, if my wife heard this conversation, would she be proud? And I only apply that to interactions with women and not podcasts. Like, I will have horrific conversations.
Yeah, there's conversations I have in my own home where my wife is not proud.
Yes, sure. But anyway... Man, this fucking battery is dying again. So I'll tell my story and then we'll just end the podcast, because it always is nice to end a podcast. Maybe this is the last episode and we just get the double ender. So when we were my wife and I first started dating, she was going to college, and a guy from her high school went to that college and very obviously, like, was carrying a torch for her and missed his shot, right? Like, she became single, I swooped in, I won, you lost. He wasn't happy about it. And so he was doing... My wife was actually pretty aware of what was happening, but he was like, we should hang out and have coffee sometime. And she's like, you know, my new boyfriend Casey and I, we have this rule that we're not going to go out one-on-one with a person of the opposite sex because we're long distance. And so that's just, like, how we can maintain our trust with each other. And he's like, I can't believe you let a man control you that way. And she's like, telling me this stuff. I'm like, isn't it crazy the lengths this guy will go to insult you till you will fucking finally give him an opening? Like, he's telling you, he's basically saying, like, this is exclusively his decision. You have no fucking autonomy in your life.
Yeah.
You're like, this is my wife's rule for me too. We were both going to college at the time. Like, it's not like I'm saying this is your... Like, anyway, it was kind of interesting. Like, dudes will say anything to talk their way into your pants.
And that's the classic. That's the classic, like, I would never treat you that way.
Right.
You know, and I've been with my wife forever, so I have very few... I had very few times I was, like, available. Right. But it is that... I definitely remember being that guy that was, like, a safe place for people to complain about their relationships too.
Right.
Where it's nice, but then afterwards you're like, oh man, I am so not a sexual threat to this person.
Yeah.
I am the gay friend, basically. You know what I mean? Like, I'm supposed to go like, girl, men are trash.
My wife, to her credit, she was dating a guy pretty close, like, she wasn't single for very long. Every year, she shaves, like, a week off of how long she was actually single between when she stopped dating that guy. I said that on stage one time, and I was like, it's gotten to the point where I'm pretty sure he was walking out the back door while I was coming to the front door.
Oh, hi, Casey!
Yeah. So they were like, they had like a tumultuous breakup. Not like, you know, by today's standards, pretty tame. But sure. like there was no abuse or anything like that. They just had like a lot of arguments at the end. And the arguments carried over into our relationship. And I remember we had been dating for like, I don't know, 3 weeks or something like that. And one day, she like, you know, she still texted with him, and it was like, we were too early in the relationship for me to be like, that's not, I don't want you to do that. Like, it's not my place. And I was like, you just got to be patient. You got to, like, to myself, this is the pep talk I'm giving myself. You got to be patient. You can't, you're going to fuck this up if you're like, start going like, you better not talk to this guy you were with. For, by the way, now it seems minuscule, but like for a year and a half or something like
that. Yeah, but back then, that's a while.
Yeah, that was the longest relationship either of us had been in. Anyway, so he texted her and he's like, I'm going and doing this with like my family. She's like, oh, cool. And they were like talking about it. And then her friend texted her and was like, yeah, he was out here like doing this. And she's like, you saw him in person? And she's like, yeah. And she goes, this is all going on while like we're watching a TV show together, right? Like, okay. All of a sudden the mood, like the temperature drops in the room. And she tells me all this, and I'm like, well, they're going to be back together next week. Like, it's obvious that she still, like, loves this dude. And there's no, they're going to be back together next week, and it sucks. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But, like, this is the thing I was worried about. And I don't think that me fucking telling her to not contact this dude would have stopped it. So I played the best game I could, and I lost. She's like, I'm never going to talk to him again. I'm like, no, you're going to be dating him again. I didn't say this, but like in my mind, I'm like, you're going to be dating.
Because she was mad.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And to her credit, never talked to that dude again after that day. And yeah, but it's like, you know, part of that is we were honest with each other. Like, again, like we don't have like a bunch of, I want to do this as a joke, but I feel like my wife knows the passcode to my phone. You know what I mean? Like, that's, I know dudes who would lose their shit. I hope you're not one of them.
Phone? No, I mean, there's no, no, that's never been, yeah, look at my phone. I don't give a shit.
Also, I text with comedians. She'll go through my pictures sometime and be like, what the fuck is this? Like, why the fuck is this on your phone? It's not like we don't have, like, but she'll go through my pictures again.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, I had in my lifetime ever one nude sent to me. You know what I mean? Not from her, to clarify. And,
well, you know, it's interesting. I was actually having coffee with your wife the other week. And, you know what the nude is on my phone? That my wife, I had sent it to my wife. It's not of me.
Right.
It's Carrot Top's dick.
Oh, that's so funny. I have that on my phone.
But she had forgotten about it, and she was, like, flipping through, looking at, like, vacation pictures or something, and she was like, what the? I'm like, oh, I keep that. I send it to people, period.
Like, at my, like, if I call him or text him, that's the picture. But when you take a pixelated image and...